question, please?
Sure.
Reva, I think when we had the opening slides, it was mentioned that if something is unreliable, it is invalid. So I suppose the developer is making the contrary point that if something is reliable, is it also automatically valid?
I don't think you can make that, but at the data element level, empiric testing of reliability of the data elements, because you are comparing their reproducibility with the authoritative source, does also address validity.
But not at the score level?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments regarding validity testing? Okay, I think we're ready to vote then.
All right. I think that we have all our votes, and I am actually supposed to. Whoops, we've lost one now. We're at 13.
13 is the correct number, I think.
All right. So we have 11 moderate, 2 low.
Okay. Let's move on.
All right. Moving on to feasibility. Some of the elements in feasibility include. Are these required data elements routinely generated and used during care delivery? And I would say yes. These data elements, in terms of the assessment and both characterization and plan of care, are routinely generated and potentially should be used in the plan of care delivery. And are these elements available in electronic form and other electronic sources? And I would say yes. Both from an administrative code point of view and as well as other data sources. And is the data collection strategy ready to be put in operational use? And I would say yes, because this measure has already been used in the PQRS system with data reported on those that chose to participate in this measure in the PQRS system. And with that, I think my rating of feasibility would still fall in the high to moderate range, and I think I would actually pick moderate for this. And as the comments on our preliminary testing, and as also has been discussed, is that data element needed for the numerator there is still a concern, and if used more widely, it may be more difficult. However, I still think this is feasible and would give it a moderate rating. And I'll open it up for discussion where on feasibility.
I think it's a very good assessment. Anyone else? Okay, let's vote.
All right, looks like we need one more vote. There we go. 3 high, 10 moderate. I'll move on. Okay.
All right, and the last thing I believe we're voting on is usability. And in terms of the usability, for maintenance measures, criteria is this measure used in at least one accountability application, and is this measure publicly reported? And given the use on the PQRS system, I believe the answer is yes. Going to the results presented in this application from the developers and through the website, And can this performance result used to further the goal of high-quality, efficient health care? And the developers do present some data on performance. And I want to just point those out that they are in Assess for Performance is on page 34 of the document. And as in the preliminary review, one of the reviewers did comment on the performance data did not do very well to discriminate above the 10th to 20th plus percentile, and that's specifically for the assessment piece. However, the characterization and plan of care are doing better in terms of the performance and the scores across the measured entities. And so I just wanted to show that data there for the three different components of this measure. And the developers do state, however, in the future, you know, this initial data was from a self-selecting group, and beginning in 2015, this may change based on changes in reporting measurement documentation. And I do believe that this measure outweighs any potential unintended consequences, and I would give it a moderate overall rating, moderate to high for usability. And I'd like to open up to any further comments.
Yeah, it looks like it's, I mean, the B and C almost topped out, but in terms of being a useful measure, but I guess they're just saying that essentially there's a lot of non-reporters. So I guess we'll, that seems like a reasonable explanation to keep it in. Any other comments? Okay, maybe we should vote.
Okay, the voting is open.
So I'm not getting it on mine here. Johannes.
You don't see the option to vote?
Not on this one, no. I don't know why.
It looks you were able to vote earlier?
Yeah.
All right. It looks nobody else had trouble voting, right?
Nope.
Is Sean still on the line?
Sean, are you still on the line?
Maybe not. All right.
Do you want to vote verbally on this one and going
sure.
forward?
Moderate, yes.
Moderate. Okay, so that's two high, eight moderate, and three low. And let's see if you have trouble on the next one as well.
Okay, so now we're going to do the overall vote. Overall stability for endorsement. Would we vote whether the measure meets the criteria for endorsement for this renewal measure? Let's vote.
I see 11 votes. 12.
Yep, moderate again for me, please. Sorry.
So yes or no?
Yes, sorry.
Okay. So you don't see the vote on this option as well?
No, I think I'm having a little trouble with my Adobe Flash here, so I apologize.
Yeah, so if you want to quit out of your browser and then open it back up and click the link again, maybe that might refresh Flash on your computer.
Okay.
All right, so this measure has passed. 13 yes, 0 no.
Great. That was a great review, by the way. Thank you for leading us through that. So is Andy on the line?
Yeah, so are we ready to start the next one then?
I think so.
You got the okay? All right. Can you hear me okay, everybody? All right, so the next measure is number 2065, gastrointestinal hemorrhage mortality rate. This is the AHRQ measure that measures in-hospital mortality when the principal diagnosis is gastrointestinal hemorrhage. I believe there's also one case where if the initial diagnosis is primary is esophageal varices, that the hemorrhage can be the secondary diagnosis. I believe that's part of this measure as well, just a nuance to it. Who is the presenter for this one?
It's me, Liliana.
Oh, great. Liliana, you want to go ahead with this? Or?
Absolutely. So you summarized it very nicely. This is a hospital-level measure, and it is a new measure that is being proposed by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. And they've done a very thorough testing of this measure, I would say. The measure is based on administrative claims, and if you go to page 25 of the web link, you will see the testing that they performed to look at the reliability of the measure. Essentially, what they did is they looked at 458,307 patients using prior data, and they performed reliability testing called signal-to-noise ratio, which I understand is a very reliable way of describing how the in-hospital variation in care might. I'm trying to explain this the best I can because I'm not a statistician, but I'm told that this is a very reliable way of testing for how clean the score, the ultimate score is. If there is a statistician in the crowd, they can perhaps go into more detail. And I'm told that you can get a score anywhere from 0 to 1, and if you end up during this test somewhere in the middle, then that's a good score. And if you go to page 28 of the website, you can see that they essentially saw a score that ranged anywhere from 0.01 to 0.6, and the average is 0.46, and that is considered a reasonable, reliable way of quantifying whether or not this is a clean measure or not. And that is all they did for reliability. The rest of their testing was all validity testing. I'm done.
Anybody have any questions about reliability testing? If there are no questions, then we can just go on and vote about reliability testing.
And I would also add that there seems to have been a technical review by the NQF, I presume by a statistician, who said in their notes to us that this particular measure, the way of reliability testing, is considered very appropriate, and that the fact that they included essentially all hospitals they had in their database is quite impressive, and that this therefore should be considered at least moderate and maybe even high in terms of reliability.
Just from edification, when you say on the description of this, the in-hospital variance is the cases in which a mortality was ascribed to GI hemorrhage and it actually wasn't a GI hemorrhage, the cause of mortality, that would be the part of the variance. Do you know about that?
No.
Yeah.
Is there anyone on the phone from AHRQ that can help explain that to us? Because I think it gets into the statistical issues that probably challenge many of us.
Sure. This is Jeffrey Kepper from AHRQ. So this measure of reliability, the signal-to-noise ratio, is essentially looking at how much of the total variation in performance that you see in this measure, how much of it is due to sort of systematic variation across hospitals, and how much of it is due to essentially random variation attributable to the fact that some hospitals have very few cases. In fact, for a condition like this, most hospitals, you know, don't have that many cases. So when you've got relatively small number of patients in a hospital, you've got some sampling variability that you need to take into account, and that's basically what this is a metric for, to assess how much of the variation is due to sampling variability. And when you take that into account, then you have a more reliable measure in the sense that a measure that is less susceptible to that type of sampling variability.
I see, but it's not really looking at whether the actual, if you looked at this measure from a different data source or looked at how the fidelity to the actual event in question. That's not being measured. It's just the variation in the sampling strategy.
That's correct. Yep.
So this is not reliability of data elements. I'm thinking that's what that means,
that's
right?
That's what that means, it sounds like.
Well, you're so.
I mean, we're measuring depth, so it's hard to imagine that the different data source will be less reliable. I think validity is different.
Yeah, what you're describing is some sort of assessment of criterion validity. What's the specificity and sensitivity of the specification with respect to some external gold standard? Not really reliability.
Okay. Fair enough. Thanks.
Any questions or concerns before we vote on the reliability? Okay, well, I guess we're voting in the midst of voting then, so we can continue.
Johannes, can you see the vote this time?
Yep, I did.
Oh, great. Okay. So we have 12 votes.
We have 12 voters or 13 for this? 13 voters for this.
13.
Okay.
We're all set.
Great. Then I guess we can move on to validity. Liliana?
Okay. Sorry, I just need to read off the votes for the transcript after each vote. So we have 13 moderate, and now we can move on.
Right. So validity testing. If you move on to page 28, you can start seeing the results of the validity testing. And that one, it's easier to understand. Essentially, what they did is something called empirical validity testing, where they came up with several hypotheses as to what the relationship should be between the score and what they're seeing. And then they actually did the scoring and see whether that hypothesis bore out or not. And one of the hypotheses was that higher volume hospitals will have better outcomes. Another hypothesis was that the hospitals that transfer out patients with GI bleeds all the time may have worse outcomes because they have less experience taking care of these patients, have higher mortality because of that. And then on the next page, you can see a table followed by the interpretation of the results. And essentially, it appears that their hypothesis, when the testing was done based on prior data for the rates of mortality in various hospitals, there was indeed a negative association between the hospital risk-adjusted mortality and the hospital volume, an opposite relationship between mortality and transfer outs, which fit with their initial hypothesis, and they used that to say that the measure must be valid because these hypotheses were borne out. They also looked at the exclusions, and essentially there is only one exclusion that they are proposing, which is the exclusion of the patients that were transferred out to an acute hospital because obviously they're not dying within the hospital where the patient presented. And what the analysis showed is that the hospitals that are transferring patients out actually have worse mortality than the patients that they're keeping. In other words, they should keep sending more patients out because the ones that they keep that kept seem to be doing poorly. It's another point that they were trying to make within their validity analysis. And then finally, when adjusting for outcomes, in addition to adjusting for comorbidities, a proposal was this particular measure is trying to also adjust for the transfer in status. In other words, the patient that received the patient in transfer from the hospital that just sent the patient away, perhaps in more extremis, perhaps sicker, et cetera, should be given credit for accepting a patient at a later stage in their care. And they showed in their analysis later on, next page, that this is justified because indeed patients that are being transferred in seem to do worse than the patients that arrive and taken care of in the same hospital from the beginning to end. So
So they're excluding transfers in and transfer out.
So they're excluding completely transfers out. And then when they're doing adjustment for when they're stratifying patients for comorbidities, et cetera, they are stratifying by transfer in. So those are not excluded, but they're given they're stratified to account for the fact that they were transferred in.
So you mean like a kind of risk adjustment?
It's a risk adjustment, correct. And what they do in the end is they calculate a statistical risk model discrimination statistics, a C-statistic, and they say that it's 0.8, which is pretty good discrimination between hospitals by deciles. And they also look at their risk stratification analysis using the data, and they note, as expected, that the patients with esophageal varices do much worse than all the other cases. So there seems to be both good stratification ability as well as discrimination ability between hospitals by deciles. So I would say that this is a pretty straightforward measure, and that measuring death seems like a pretty valid thing.
Any questions or comments?
So, yeah, this is Zahid. I have a question regarding the patients that were transferred out. Could it be that the patients did poorly that were kept in-house because they were too sick to transfer out? And would the severity adjustment have adjusted for that?
We'll let AHRQ answer that one. If they're on the phone, if they can answer it.
Well, the severity adjustment would account for difference in severity in the patients that actually presented at that particular hospital. And then the intention of the risk adjustment for transfers in is to account for any, you know, sort of clinical characteristics of those patients that are being transferred from one hospital to another that aren't otherwise accounted for by, you know, the diagnosis codes and the comorbidities and measures.
Right, but my question was different, not the ones that are transferred in, but those that tend to – there was an implication made that those hospitals that were transferring people out had a higher mortality than could otherwise be explained, but my only question was, could it be because the patients were too sick to transfer and therefore they ended up dying more in the hospital that they stayed in, and whether there was a risk adjustment of those cases that could have basically sorted that out.
So the statement about hospitals that transfer out cases tend to have higher mortality, so that transfer out rate is across the board. It's not just specific to the cases that are in the denominator of this measure. So the argument is basically that hospitals that transfer out large percentages of their patients, the construct is that they, you know, tend to have less capability, probably have less quality of care, and so the association between their overall transfer out rate and the higher mortality rate for this particular measure is just intended to be evidence of consistency with that construct. But it's not a measure of that patients who are transferred out who have GI hemorrhage have higher mortality rates. That fact is a comment. Patrick, did you have a comment?
Yeah, this is Dr. Romano, Patrick Romano from the AHRQ team. One other point is just the concern is often raised that hospitals may achieve low risk-adjusted mortality rates for conditions such as GI hemorrhage by transferring out all the patients who are going to die, leaving them with risk-adjusted mortality rates that look good, but they've essentially dumped their dying patients in other hospitals. So this is reassuring that, in fact, the hospitals that tend on average to transfer out more patients still have higher risk-adjusted mortality rates with this measure. Does that make sense?
Yes. So that's sort of the other side of the argument. I was just simply sort of trying to sort out that the patients that were being kept had a higher mortality rate and whether that risk-adjusted higher mortality rate would have actually adjusted for the fact that, that these patients were perhaps too sick to be transferred.
Well, it's possible, but we don't know, of course, because the reason why these patients have to be excluded is that the program is designed so that hospitals and hospital systems can implement it using their own data without knowing what happened to the patient after transfer. So essentially we have a missing outcome problem when the patient's transferred. We don't know on the individual patient basis what their outcome was at the second hospital. So that kind of forces our hand to exclude those patients. But fortunately, it doesn't seem to introduce bias in this case.
Okay, thank you.
I have a separate question that I guess was alluded to a little bit earlier, and that this measurement tells us that the measure behaves in a way that we might have expected it to behave, and there's some obviously that supports validity. I guess what I'm concerned is there some body of evidence out there that would say that the diagnosis that was given is actually accurate, and that the primary diagnosis really was a GI hemorrhage and was the primary cause of hospitalization?
Yes, I can address that too. So I would say there's two bodies of evidence. One is that there are general studies that have looked at the validity of the principal diagnosis, which is, of course, the diagnosis that principally drives the DRG assignment. Therefore, it's a diagnosis that a lot of people are concerned about, including hospitals, CMS, other payers, so forth. So in general, we know that the accuracy of the principal diagnosis is on the order of 95%, at least at the level at which we're using it here, which is an aggregation of principal diagnoses. The second body of evidence come from studies that have used administrative claims data linked with other data sources, either chart review or registry. The study that that we cited in a previous submission was a study that showed 88% positive predictive value for GI hemorrhage diagnoses appearing in any diagnosis field on the hospital discharge abstract. So 88% positive predictive value for all the diagnoses. And again, we know that tends to be higher for the principal diagnosis, which drives payment, and which is the key diagnosis that's used to define the denominator for this indicator.
Thank you for that. Any other questions or discussion before we go to vote on validity? I think we're ready to vote. Give everybody 3 seconds to change their vote, and then we have 13 votes. Okay, looks like we're locked in then.
All right, that's 2 high and 11 moderate.
And then we could move on to feasibility. Well, Liana, you're doing great.
Thank you. So feasibility, because this is a collection of billing data, presumably it will be pretty straightforward to gather the information from all the hospitals that are submitting their scores. And the clinical data about death and no death is hard to cheat on. I have some concerns about cheating on what you code as a diagnosis if you know that you're being measured for death from bleeding. And can you then say, oh, maybe this patient died from a heart attack instead or something else? In other words, cheat the system. But assuming that everybody is honest and that this is electronically gathered, it is still quite a feasible measure overall. what I would say. And it looks like our reviewers agreed with that, and the scores from everybody prior to this discussion on the high side and medium, moderate.
Anybody have an additional comment to that? Seems pretty straightforward. Okay, I think we can move on to vote on feasibility. I don't think we include gamesmanship as a question, but I appreciate your concern. I have the same concern.
Well, you know, as we start measuring one thing, people are going to try and
which diagnoses come in more commonly seem to change as we measure.
Correct.
Has everyone voted?
Yeah, we got one more vote missing here, it looks like. Anyone not vote yet?
Anyone have trouble voting? Is anyone abstaining from this vote for some reason? All right, it's possible.
Somebody may have dropped off or walked away.
Is that someone? All right, well, we have 10 high and 2 moderate.
Okay. And we'll move on to usability.
So this is a new measure, so it hasn't been used before for public reporting, but it does seem like a very credible measure that could be used in public reporting and could be used, if not gamed, for improvement of care on multiple fronts, not just by how quickly somebody went to the GI suit, but how quickly medicines were administered, how quickly they were triaged to the emergency room. So it's a nice system measure of the quality of the care within a hospital. So I think it's both usable and could drive improvement. And I think that the benefits, even with the gamesmanship that potentially could occur, outweighs negative consequences of blaming and naming some hospitals as providing lesser care.
Comments, discussion?
If I could make a slight correction, this is Patrick Romano again. I think that this indicator actually has been in use, although it has not been NQF endorsed, and it has been modified partially in response to the suggestions that this steering committee made in the phase one review. But if you refer to page 14 and 15 of the submission, I think there are some examples given of previous uses and ongoing uses of this measure, although, again, it has not been submitted previously for NQF endorsement.
Good to know.
Thank you. So currently in use and with some significant historical data.
I have a question. This is Zahid again. Is the sort of recommendation to use this in sort of public accountability setting as only a severity adjusted measure, or since it's such an important outcome measure, or can it be used either as an adjusted measure or an unadjusted measure? Because I think that makes a big difference from my standpoint in terms of its usability for public accountability.
NQF endorsement is linked to the specific methodology that we have presented here. So it would be linked to the risk adjustment and the reliability adjustment procedure as they've been presented.
Okay, so it will only be a risk-adjusted measure based on the methodology.
Yes, that's the only one that's being endorsed is the risk-adjusted methodology.
Right, because I know that it has been used not in public setting, but in other settings as an unadjusted measure as well. So I think that's good that it's risk adjusted.
Thank you. Any other comments or discussion? And I think we can move on to usability, Maureen. We are to vote. Voting. Oh, NQF line dropped. We are dialing back.
Here we are. We're back. Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. Do we need to refresh to be able to vote if you do that, or I see this message there.
No, it would just be the phone. We should still be in on the webinar.
Okay.
So was there still an outstanding question about...
No. We're ready for usability voting. There were no more discussions items.
Great. I think we did we lose?
Okay, I think I know some people had to sign off a little early, so we may have lost somebody. We've got 11 high, 1 moderate for a total of 12 votes.
Okay, we're done with that one. Liliana, thank you very much, especially the statistical part.
Sorry.
Andy, we do have one more vote. It's the overall vote for endorsement.
Oh, I apologize, but thank you anyway, Liliana. So vote for the endorsement. Does it meet the criteria for endorsement? Looks like we have all the votes in.
All right, that's 12 yes, 0 no.
So we'll move on to the next one, which is the next one 0658? Is that where we're going next?
Mm-hmm.
Just want to make sure I got the right order. Let me just pull that up for a second, see which one of the two.
That's the normal colonoscopy.
This is the normal one?
Correct.
Okay. That's Phil?
This was Johannes, but I think Phil's there too, so.
I'm sorry, the voice
that's,
is. All right, so
okay.
this is the measure 0658, which is a measure of screening colonoscopy. Yes, screening colonoscopy for which a normal result, in other words, there were no polyps removed or other reasons for earlier follow-up. So a normal result in an average-risk patient with documentation in the record of a recommendation of a 10-year follow-up examination. And I believe this measure is reported out with some exceptions so that you could actually measure separately the number of those that have medical exceptions or patient exceptions, but that those... so that they can be reported out as separate numerators. Phil, are you on the phone? I think you're probably the presenter.
I think Johannes. This is Johannes.
Oh,
I think I am. I think Phil's doing the next one, which is much more controversial.
No,
I got the softball, and I'm sorry I missed
Johannes,
the beginning.
This is all yours. We've been hearing your voice. Great.
And this is either because this is seems a lot simpler to me than all the other ones we've already discussed, or maybe I missed some of the pertinent parts, but I did miss a little bit of the introduction. So to me, this is a renewal of an existing one. I think we've all voted and thought of this as a pretty transparent measure, which is that if you have a normal colonoscopy and no reasons for an exception, you shouldn't do another colonoscopy or shouldn't recommend another colonoscopy for 10 years. And the variety of measures here, both on reliability that we're going to start with, seem to confirm that that this is a useful and a reasonable way of addressing that and measuring that. So while I'm certainly not a statistician either, but the numbers given on pages 29 to 31 on the reliability measures are, for me, appear to be quite good on the testing that those done.
So let's look at the reliability testing first.
Starts on page 29 is the bottom of it and then goes on to 30. So there's the number of events with a reliability as data set 1 and 2. Sorry, my phone line keeps dropping out, I think.
Hold That's on. Right. We hear you.
Okay.
yeah. And at least according to the numbers here, the reliability looks, you know, extremely good. I don't know if anyone has a particular concern or question about this. This is, once again, appears to be straightforward reliability testing. No questions or concerns about reliability? So I'm thinking that this is, now, you know, this whole thing about data element versus scoring, I guess I'm trying to understand what technically this is. Is this, I guess this is considered data element reliability?
So I'm out of my league on that one. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm probably stretching myself a little bit. So does anybody want to jump in, or is everybody comfortable with that?
Andy, the testing attachment should have that indicated by the developer on how they evaluated it. It's one of the questions.
I'm sorry. I must have missed that. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm actually in the document. I guess I went down a little too far. Reliability computed measure score is measured as the ratio of signal to noise.
Hi, this is Sam Tierney with the AMA PCPI. I just thought I could answer that question fairly quickly.
Boy, I'd love you to go ahead and do that. Thank you.
It is at the score level. And not at the data element level.
Okay.
And that's indicated in 282.1.
Okay.
All right. Nevertheless, reliability looks very high. Are there any questions or concerns about this testing or reliability in general? Not to make it more complicated than it is, and I think we can vote on reliability. And I think we're supposed to have 12 of us still, right? Or we're supposed to have 12, we only have 10. Anyone not voted yet?
We may have lost a couple of other folks. Phil, I don't know if you have – I don't think you have internet access. Do you want to vote verbally?
Hi. It's Nancy. And
okay.
I don't have the little check boxes on my page anymore. When you did that – whatever you did to bring the pages back up, my check boxes went away.
Okay. What worked last time was just having you press F5 and to refresh your browser, but you can just vote verbally.
I have a Mac.
Oh, okay. Maybe try quitting out of your browser and relaunching it. If you want to vote verbally for this this one, hopefully it'll come up on the next vote.
Okay. Moderate, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Phil, did you want to vote verbally?
I did. Oh, sorry.
I
said moderate.
Moderate for Nancy. How about Phil?
He's still on the line.
He was there a minute ago. All right. Well, it seems like we've got enough votes, so we have 4 high and 7 moderate.
Okay. Then let's move on to validity.
All right. And so there, similarly, the validity testing is quite high. The composite score is always over 4, with, you know, the overwhelming majority of people voting this as strongly agree.
So this is a systematic assessment of face validity. I think we should note that, and similar to the methodology that we had seen earlier. Any questions or concerns about this?
Andy, this is Reva. I just would like the committee's response to the comment that was submitted by American College of Physicians about the upper age limit in this measure.
Okay.
Or the lack thereof, actually.
Yeah. So there is no age limit. I have to go back and address, you know, and I read the comments and then forgot to look again. This is just open. Okay. Well, do you want the committee to respond to that, or I guess the AMA already responded to that, right?
Right, but I think it's something you want to factor into your discussion of validity, particularly as how the specifications are aligned with the evidence.
Right. So can someone who's GI remind me, but if I'm not mistaken, there's the recommendation is that these 10-year colonoscopies would not occur after age 75, is it?
So, yeah, and so this is Johannes again. So this, you know, it's a little bit of a moving target, right? So within the last year, the whole Choosing Wisely campaign has endorsed discontinuing colonoscopy in patients who've had a normal exam by or before age 75. That in and of itself hasn't been incorporated into the guidelines and or other work done by the three main GI societies. So, you know, what we don't know, for example, if a person has had an that's where it's moving towards. I think, you know, this, in my opinion, this is catching it right in evolution, right? So when we talked about this last fall, that really wasn't in the forefront. It's certainly in the forefront right now, and I don't know how to recommend. It's likely going to be the standard. I don't know that it's been de facto accepted as that.
So, and I don't know how to deal with that because this is essentially now we're re-talking evidence. I just wonder if one way to handle this would say that the score be stratified to those patients
at
the age of 50 and 65, and after 65 would be a separate count because there are many people who would believe that once you're 65, you don't need another colonoscopy at all.
Right.
The idea of the evidence review to determine what do you do with people over 65, I think, could be handled by the user. I don't know if that makes much sense to people or if the AMA wants to comment since they are on the line here.
But I think this is Zahid. I think Johannes is correct that, you know, once it sort of becomes a de facto standard, if you will, perhaps in the next go around it could be somehow incorporated. But currently, really, that's sort of the guideline in terms of over the age of 50, which is kind of what this is really primarily addressing.
Well, Zahid or Johannes or anyone who's more familiar with the GI, I don't recall the evidence review, but in the evidence that was cited, did the evidence stop at any particular age or the evidence was basically no upper age?
I don't believe that the guidelines have that upper age in there at this time with the evidence that was cited.
I think there's a caveat that if you're over the age of 75, the life expectancy has to be equal to or greater than 10 years.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess the concern is that when we get to the idea of could we be doing harm to that portion of the discussion, there are some that may be concerned that even a healthy, you know, 75-year-old, you could potentially be doing more harm than good by doing a colonoscopy. And nobody knows the answer to that, but it would start, as the patient gets older, that would start to be a concern of mine. So I don't know how we'll address that. I guess we can address it at that time. I guess we have no definitive answer here except to say we'll base our decision on the measure as presented, since the current evidence was used to develop this measure and we accepted that evidence.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any other discussion on it, please. But if there's not, then I think we should be voting on the validity based on the measure as is. And during the usability, if we want to discuss potential untoward effects, we certainly can bring it up then.
Okay.
No other comments then? Okay, then I think we should go ahead then with the vote on validity.
Nancy, are you able to vote this time?
If we have 10, how many did we have last time?
Yeah,
11?
We had 12 last time. Or we had 11 last time, you're right.
Yeah, even with Nancy, I think we had 11, so I think we have the full amount.
Yep, so that's 10 moderate, 1 low.
Okay, then I guess the next is feasibility.
Right, and there, again, I believe that you know the metrics used show that this is a metric that is measurable and incorporated in the majority of reports and is very feasible.
When we talk about feasibility, so this is something that I presume I don't think there's any coding for this, is there? I don't think there's a CPT-2 code, so this is essentially chart review?
Well, this I think is much of this is based on the data elements that were defined for the AGA and the GI Quick Outcomes Registry. So some of that discussion, I think, will sort of take place more so in the e-measures discussion, which I think is going to follow.
Right.
But
okay.
To the extent that this is currently, you know, mostly reported through this registry mechanism, it's feasible to the extent that people are reporting this data and you know, getting measure performance out of it.
Yeah. Andy and Zahida Sriva, in terms of any discussion around the e-measure, I mean, it should be incorporated into this whole discussion because it was presented as part of the same measure submission. But I also want to just point out time, Andy, and how you might want to handle the fact that we're very close to our time and we need to at least do some public comment.
So do we want to – I think eMeasure may take a little time since we've not talked eMeasure, and I know Zahid has done some expert analysis for us, then I think we should probably halt the voting at this point. Means if there's only 3 minutes and let there be public comment, and when we return, we'll go back to feasibility, but we may have to back up to the e-measure specs and make sure we have that straight and that our prior voting takes that into consideration.
Yes, so, we can pull that up to start with on the next call next Monday, and if there's no other questions or comments from the committee at this time, then we'll go to public comment. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
I'd go ahead and open it up so the public has an opportunity.
Natalie, can you open the lines?
All lines are open.
All right. Sounds like me.
I was going to say, so it sounds like we're going to give everybody a minute and a half back because I don't think opening up another question is worth the – we don't have the time for that.
All right.
I think things went pretty smoothly. So thank you to everyone on the committee and at NQF. This was more systematic than I had ever hoped for. So good stuff. Now we know what to expect next time.
This is Johannes. Just one last comment. I'm sorry. I have to apologize. I have to go away and I'm going to miss the next call because I'm on a family issue that I have to attend to next week. So I apologize for that, but thank you for allowing me to participate and look forward to the next time.
Thank you. We'll fill in for you next time.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. So we'll talk to you next Monday, April 8th, again at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and we'll cover the remaining issues for this measure and then discuss the last three measures at that time. And if you have any comments before then, please don't hesitate to call or email the project team. And we'll look forward to speaking with you next week. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude our conference call. Please, you may now disconnect.
Thank you.